Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
reading a good article from the 21st of March, New Scientist, in the Virology News section, obviously, by Michael Marshall, Public Enemy Number One, the new coronavirus is no small threat, but we are starting to understand how it works. Very interesting. This is by far the best article I've read so far. The COVID-19 virus is humanity's newest foe, with the potential to prematurely end billions of lives. To control this new coronavirus, we need to understand it. Labs around the world are now working around the clock in a bid to control, to know their enemy. Three crucial questions occupying virologists. What makes the new virus so good at infecting people? How does it reproduce so quickly once it's inside us? And why doesn't the virus cause symptoms straight away, allowing it to spread undetected? The answers will suggest ways to treat the disease, develop vaccines. See the race for vaccine, page 44. Okay, we'll read that later on. Clues can be found in the virus's biology. Like all viruses, the COVID-19 virus must infect living cells in order to reproduce. Each virus strives to burrow into the cell and take over the internal machinery, repurposing it to build components of new viruses. The new viruses are then ejected from the cell where they can infect more cells, either in the same body or a new host. The COVID virus belongs to a family of coronaviruses, which are fairly intricate as viruses go. Each coronavirus has a core strand of RNA, a molecule similar to DNA, that carries the virus's gene. So they don't have DNA, they've got RNA. So that's ribose nucleic acid, I think with U in it, and it's got some oxides on the ribose. Around this protein shell is surrounded two layers of molecules called lipids. So that's the standard, it's like a mini cell, it's a standard vesicle cell. Lipids has a water-like section and a oil-like section. So the oil-like section forms, it's a bubble, it's like a soap film bubble, but a water bubble inside a soap film bubble. The outer membrane is dotted with proteins, some of which stick out like spikes and sea urchin. And this is a fairly standard thing in that you basically have a little like a baby's dummy which sticks within the lipid layer. The spikes proteins are critical, says Michael Lakito of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at Montana, as they act as an anchor for the virus, attaching the protein to the outside of the cell. And so we published the March research list by Alec Gonzalez at Wall of Washington University in Seattle, used electron microscopy to determine the atomic structure of spike proteins in cell COVID-19 virus. With this information, inhibitor drugs can now be designed to block it from attaching to a human cell. Another approach is to target the proteins in the human cells that the spikes latch onto. To do that, first we have to know what they are. One candidate for this method is the attachment point used to closely related SARS virus, angiostin-converting enzyme ACE2. In late February, Lakito's team became one of several to confirm that new coronavirus spike protein also binds to ACE2. So, this sort of something on the outside of cells and that docks to it. The QHC's role of ACE2 makes sense. It's expressed in the lung and it's expressed in the gastrointestinal tract, so it may partially explain why the virus is able to affect those places. However, the virus doesn't simply attach itself to ACE2. The spike protein first has to split itself and it's harnessed human cell protein to do this. The protein that is co-opted in this way is transmembrane protease serine 2, TRMPRSS2, which was identified by two studies published in March. Wiles' team found the second protein called furin can also split the spike protein. These can also be targets, said Rolf Hingelfinger, the University of Lübeck, Germany. We can block these human proteins with drugs. Viruses won't be able to get into the host cells, although the protein's normal functions would be interrupted, potentially causing side effects. So I don't know what my protein splitting into, but I can imagine the protein locking and then splitting into, meaning the virus fuses in. The virus entry to cells can also be interrupted by a protein called lymphocyte antigen 6E, LY6E, which is involved in an immune response. In a study published the 7th of March, Stephanie Pfander, lovely word, at Ruhr University Bochum in Germany and her colleagues showed that LY6E stops many coronaviruses, including COVID-19 virus, from entering cells. And that mice lacking... Oh, sorry, I've got a really sore eye at this moment. LY6E are more vulnerable to infection than those with it. She says, if we find out what the protein does, it might be possible to mimic it with a drug, and it might be able to fight against the infection of many coronaviruses. Having a coronavirus inhibitor would obviously be great. You can mention that. It'll really slow down infection if you have that. The importance also to help against future outbreaks and not only current pandemics, she says. Stopping the virus entering cells is one thing, but if a person is already infected, it may not help. In any case, we need a way to interfere with the virus's ability to copy itself inside a cell. Oh, sorry. There are two obvious attack points. To proliferate, the virus has to build proteins and copy the RNA genome. The proteins are first made. When the virus's RNA enters the infected cell, the host machine reads the virus cell. The string, together with two large polyproteins, contains several viral proteins. So, just to get your idea, you've got the... Now, we know you've got the nucleus, and the nucleus has a nucleole, and it puts the RNA ribosome machines into this nucleole, and they travel out through a tube system called the reticulum, endoplasmic rough ER. It travels out through that tube, locks on the surface, and these little machinery things that work to build DNA. And the great thing is that, build proteins. The thing is that it can't just build a protein and just pump it into the atmosphere. It's got to build it and build it into the cytoplasm. It's got to build it and put it in a vesicule. Which seems to be what's happening with this virus. Some of these enzymes are called protease, which first cut themselves out of the polyprotein and then cut out other proteins, freeing themselves to carry their function. So it's pretty amazing in that it makes the entire virus complete. These big proteins, and these proteins begin to cut themselves off into their functional groups. When you interrupt that, the virus cannot replicate, says Hilfinger. Hilglenfeld. His team has determined the atomic structure of the main protease and identified substances that bind to it. His group has been developing an inhibitor for the main protease, coronavirus, and related groups called enteroviruses. I don't know what enterovirus is, in hope that the drug will be broadly applicable enough to appeal to a drug company. The researchers have now modified them so that they can work on the COVID-19 virus and showed that the resulting drug works on a single cell. However, there are still many more stages of testing before the drug could be used on people with COVID-19. The other option is to stop the virus copying its genome. This is done with another viral protein, the RNA-dependent RNA polymerase, RDPRP. Most RNA viruses don't check for errors when copying their genomes, so they can be blocked by introducing modified RNA building blocks with the RDRP to incorporate if the virus is stupid enough. Well, there you go. So so the cell's DNA is masters at error correction. So you and I can have cells. Some last only a few hours, and so that's, you know, a good fraction of a million replications in your body before you die without error. So it's got error correction for it. So these don't have error correction. You would think that they don't really need a lot of error correction, because you produce 100 and say 20 have errors, well, you still produced 80. Unfortunately, coronaviruses, like the COVID-19 virus, have a proofreading system enzyme called exon nuclease, which removes modified RNA components and allows copying to continue. Many existing DRP inhibitors do not help against coronaviruses, said Hengelfeld. Nevertheless, in a preliminary step, researchers led by Tai Yang at the Qingzhou Medical College in China have identified 7 chemicals that their calculations suggest might bind to it. Meanwhile, a drug called remdesivir, originally developed to treat Ebola, has been shown to promise as an RDP inhibitor. So, you want to put that drug with another drug, the drug which stuffs up the virus and the anti-1. In the long term, we need to know why the virus is so good at spreading. It's undetected spread that has contributed a lot to the severity of the outbreak. The key to the virus's spread is the ability to reproduce inside our bodies for days without triggering immune responses. The most recognisable symptoms of COVID-19, a fever and cough, are actually due to the immune system fighting back, while the virus delays with extra genes it carries. So, you're actually getting better when you start to cough. These non-structural genes code for proteins that interfere with our immune system. When the cell becomes infected, an alarm system called interferon pathway is triggered. The virus has proteins to interfere with the interferon, I suppose. Some of the non-structural genes in COVID-19 look similar to known genes, so we can make educated guess about their function. Quote, but some of the stuff we really don't have a firm grasp on, says Thicker. In the immediate future, understanding these proteins may not help us slow the outbreak, but it could help build an antiviral drug in the future. Okay, so this is a long time off. So you'd think this will probably be the last gasp of the 20th century ignorance, I suppose. No, this virus isn't a bioweapon. Now, this is rather interesting. New diseases have emerged throughout human history, and we've seen 2 major coronavirus outbreaks in the last 2 decades, SARS and MERS. So we shouldn't be surprised by the arrival of COVID-19 virus. However, rumours on social media suggest the outbreak was human-made. Some say the virus is leaked from a Chinese lab studying coronaviruses. Others suggest the virus is engineered to spread among humans. Even the most secure laboratories do sometimes have accidents, and a human-engineered pandemic has been identified as a possible risk to our civilization, but there is no good evidence that either has happened. Many similar viruses are found in wild bats, and it seems likely that the origin of this one, particularly via intermediate hosts. Similarly, we know that both SARS and MERS came from bats, so there is no reason to involve a laboratory accident. Researchers at the Shanluilui Ohio State University says there's no credible evidence for genetic engineering emergent microbes in the infections version. The virus genomes has been sequenced, and it has been and if it's been altered, we'd expect to see signs of insert gene sequence. But we know the points that differ from bats viruses are scattered at a fairly random way, just as they would be if a new virus had evolved naturally. So that's beginning to look at that virus. Okay, I'll just read. Reading it actually backwards. It's country is getting it right, so I can get this out to you. Okay. An interview by Bruce Allard. The country is getting it right. The world can learn lessons from how China, South Korea, Singapore have handled COVID-19. The Hughes, Bruce Allard tells Jessica Hamzu. Last month, the World Health Organization, his assistant director, Dr. Bruce Allard, set out to learn more about China's response to the COVID-19 outbreak and generate recommendations for China and other countries. He told Jessica Hamzu that we have learned so far. Jessica Hamzu. Cases in China are declining. We are now only seeing a handful of newly reported cases every day. Does China have the virus under control? That's interesting. That's a good word sentence. Bruce Allard, Aylward. It has absolutely turned it around, but governors, mayors and others I've talked to in China would never say things like under control. When I asked them if they felt good about falling cases, they said no. They said they were building more beds and buying more ventilators because they were worried that they might never get something like this, a new virus that we don't understand, under control. Now they are planning to open up all the travel restrictions, get people back to work and get students back to school. But their feelings was that this is going to remain in the population and raise its ugly head and have an to respond rapidly. Well, this is it. We basically can't, you know, we in Australia can't do anything until we actually buy sufficient respirators, build our capacity, and then get it under control. How did China get to this point? China did something most other countries would not even have tried, and many people would have been thought would have been impossible. It used fundamental public health approaches such as case finding, contact tracing to stop respiratory virus. That seemed almost impossible as a premise because the respiratory viruses transmit so effectively and efficiently. Typically, the only way you can stop them is with a vaccine or pharmaceutical treatment. What China did provides a lesson for infectious diseases epidemiologists. Does it mean China's extreme lockdowns were the right way to go? Everyone always starts that at the wrong end of the China response. The first thing it was try to prevent the spread as much as it could and make sure people knew about the disease and how to get tested. To actually stop the virus, it had to do rapid testing of any suspect case, immediate isolation of anyone who was confined or suspected case, and then quarantine the close contacts for 14 days so they could figure out if they were infected. And those were measures that stopped transmission in China, not big travel restrictions and lockdowns. Stopping the movement of people doesn't stop the virus jumping from person to person. It just prevents those people from moving to other places. The travel restrictions and lockdowns were to give them time to get other things in place and actually stop the transmission. So I think that may be an important point that we're not doing. We spoke to Italy and the other day. They said, "We've got these lockdowns in place." I said, "Great. You've done the hard part. Now you have to do the really hard part, and that's making sure those cases are effectively isolated." Italy is the most affected country in Europe. What's happening there? What's happening in Italy and many other countries in Europe is that they're treating the mild cases at home. In some countries, they're not even testing them. They're saying that if you have a cough or fever, stay at home. But the problem is that the people don't know that they have the disease. They haven't had it confirmed. After a couple of days, people get bored, so go out for a walk, go shopping, and other people get infected. If you know you are infected, you're more likely to isolate yourself. The general population is around 68% of those affected are going to have a mild, moderate disease. If those people are out of hospital, most of your cases are at home, but not isolated. In China, they found that didn't work. They had to get them isolated in hospitals or dormitories or stadiums. The main goal was to keep them from getting bored. When countries have responded, which country has responded well to outbreaks? There are lots. Look at South Korea. They've been pretty rigorous about testing all suspect cases and finding all contacts. In the past couple of days, we have seen that instead of relentless upward creep of cases, it seems, that turned a corner, which is positive. Singapore is another country that has been hit with importations again and again, and they're jumping on them, tracing all cases, tracing the contacts, professionally isolating them. It seems to be doing pretty well, even though it's got relatively big numbers. Canada has imputations into four or five different provinces, and in almost all of those, it has been able to keep the numbers fairly low following a very similar rapid test approach. And in all those places, it's very easy to get tested as well. Well, I don't know, Australia's got slightly lower than Canada. We've got a lower population, I suppose. I don't think we're doing a very good job here in Australia, is my overall point. Do you think these countries have learnt the lessons of past outbreaks? Oh, absolutely. When you look at Singapore, South Korea, China, why are they so aggressive in terms of finding the contact tracing coronavirus? Well, yeah, it's pretty interesting. Well, they were hit by SARS. Similarly, if you look at Canada, it's a big SARS outbreak in 2003. Okay, Canada's not doing so well now. But you see, Canada's got a big porous border with the United States, which is going completely kaput. Welcome to Donald Trump, US guys. Why has the case fatality rate been lower in South Korea than other countries? It's been a relatively young population. The population age of 65 in South Korea is something like 14%, half that of Japan, much lower than Italy. A case fatality rate of 1%, close to what we are seeing in South Korea now, is what you see in young population. But the case fatality rate has been creeping up over time. Thing I would remember, even right now in South Korea, is that the fatality rate is tenfold higher than seasonal flu. Is that why it's been so bad in Italy, because the population is older? We're not sure. I saw some data from north of Italy that suggests around one-third of the cases are being managed at home. Some of the milder cases aren't being tested and officially diagnosed. That's part of the problem. The second is older population. The third is also very early in the outbreak. That sometimes is where you see the high mortality amongst the older people and distorts the picture. What do you think of the UK, which has been taking strong measures, which hasn't been taking strong measures in some countries? People have different reasons for taking different measures at different times in the outbreak. Chris Whitley, Chief Medical Officer to UK, is one of the brightest, most sensible, careful people I know. I'm not going to second-guess anybody at this time. How effective is closing school? It's a tough one. The data on this is for a different disease. It's not for flu. Kids get roaring flus and the whole classroom gets sick. Kids get their families infected. Parents have to stay home with the kids and get sick to go to work. And affect others. But one of the curious things about COVID-19 is that we've not seen school outbreaks. I talked to my colleagues in South Korea and China, in Italy, everywhere. No one has seen school outbreaks. They have seen situations where teachers is infected as they have infected kids, but that's different from kids getting each other infected. When you talk about school closures, you want to know, is it going to reduce the intensity of transmission? We know that it probably won't reduce the number of sick people very much, because not many kids get sick. What we don't know is, are kids getting infected and we just can't see? And if they are they carrying it back to their families? Even if we don't have a lot of data to suggest kids are infecting their families, so the results of countries have done things differently. There is a chance that when cases decline in countries, the restrictions loosen. Will we see more infections? What happens? China decided that it cannot afford to go to absolute zero, not knowing if they ever will. So they decided to strengthen the whole system so they could live with the disease if they had to. It's building additional capacity to isolate people, and it's building additional ventilators. It's planning to be able to manage the low-level disease and prevent large outbreaks. It's a very sensible way to plan. It's wishful thinking to think the virus is going to disappear altogether. People keep saying that maybe in a warm season it will. Last time I checked, Singapore was very warm, and it's roaring away there. Have you seen anything like this outbreak before? As soon as you compare the disease to others, you're dead. This is a new disease. Respect it and learn from it as it evolves. The more you learn on your old experiences, the more mistakes you're going to lean on your old experiences, the more mistakes you're going to make. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.